Hello and welcome to the Legal & General Group Protection Communication Swap Shop. I'm Suzanne Clarkson and I'm absolutely delighted to be joined today by Sally Pritchett, CEO of creative agency Something Big. Welcome, Sally.
Hi, thank you very much for having me today.
So let's get straight into it. Let's find out a bit more about what you do and about Something Big. So what does the company do? How many employees do you have? Are they working from home, in the office, all that kind of stuff? Tell me a bit more about the company.
Fab, yes. So Something Big is a creative communications agency. So we work with businesses to help them talk and engage their staff, their customers, their communities. I've run the business since co-founding it about 20 years ago. And we're a team of about 35. We're lucky enough to be based in really beautiful offices just on a canal. So we've got beautiful views and can go for nice little walks at lunchtime. very handy. We're growing, thriving and busy every day. We are in the offices a few days a week. Like most people, we're navigating hybrid. But we're doing quite a nice job of that, I think.
Yeah. And that is a new thing post pandemic, is it? Or were you working like that prior to the pandemic?
Well, yeah, we were quite flexible. We have a lot of women between sort of 20 and 30 and above just in the team anyway. So we had a lot of, you know, young parents. So we were always quite flexible. But yes, certainly this degree of hybrid is new since COVID. And it's taken a bit of settling into, but we've got a nice team day going on a Wednesday when we're all in. So a great kind of atmosphere that day. And then others are working their way around how to make it convenient.
Yeah. Well, it's obviously working because for a small company, you've won an awful lot of awards. I was just looking prior to our call, you've won the Great Place to Work for Wellbeing Award and Best Places for Women. Also, I had a quick shifty on your Glassdoor comments by employees past and present that show you've got a very inclusive company. So what do you think your secret is?
Thanks. Yeah, I think we do put quite a lot of effort and pride in the way we operate and lead the team. And I think a lot of that comes back to my experience pre-running the business where I was an employee and they weren't always the best experiences. And I think I just put a lot of effort into, would I want to treat my own family, my children like this? And if not, then probably that's not what, you know, my employees want either. And I think when we use that as our sort of guiding framework, we bring in a lot more compassion, fairness, respect, and that's what creates that inclusive environment that you refer to.
Yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because those are just normal ways of being in our lives outside of work, aren't they? Being inclusive, communicating with each other, having compassion. But unfortunately, that seems to get lost at the door of a lot of workplaces. It has traditionally done for a long time now. But they're just normal ways of being, aren't they? That should be reflected in the workplace as well.
Absolutely. It just needs to feel right. Is it the right thing to do?
Yeah. And can I just delve a bit more into Best Places for Women? What do you think led to that?
Well, and I think this is really interesting because I think, you know, if you were to put a lens over, you know, Best Place for, you know, people with different abilities or any kind of micro community, you would find that whatever you do for that community is also good for all. So when we look at Best Place to Work for Women, we're often referring to, you know, flexible working, you know, childcare support, and those kind of things. And that is right for everyone. Those things are not special sometimes to women. But I personally did put more effort into creating an environment where women could succeed and thrive and continue to grow their careers after having maternities, because I have three children. I don't think we should have to separate and choose between one or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great stuff. And good communication is obviously, we mentioned about things outside of work should be reflected in the workplace, and good communication is one of them. It's a two-way thing. It's not just leadership telling people how it is and expecting everyone just to get in line. It's about listening to others, genuinely listening to others. So just on that note, what do you do to listen to your employees, your colleagues, to listen to their needs and ensure an environment of trust and openness?
I think that is a great question, because I think we all communicate and, you know, tell, and really to create the environments that we want, we need to listen to. And I think, although it's a buzzword, I think we need to talk about psychological safety here. And that is not something we can achieve overnight. It's not straightforward. It takes a building up over time of trust. So the sorts of things that we've done as an organisation to build that trust, it might be that we've done confidential surveys, giving people a voice through that. We do something that we call time to talk, which is a regular spot for different individuals to talk to people, like the sort of water cooler moment that they might get if we weren't hybrid. And giving people a sense that this is an ongoing commitment. It's not a fad that we're talking and listening right now. You know, listening can't be something we do once a year through an employee opinion survey. That is a great tool, but it's just one tool. And I think we also do it end to end through from recruitment. We listen all the way through induction, right the way through to exit interviews, etc. You know, so it's something, listening has to be something that you put into your DNA as an organisation. And that's what builds the trust.
Oh, Sally, that is music to my ears. So many organisations think, oh, we do a once a year engagement survey. So we are listening. We're listening to our people. But of course, that's not what it's about, is it? It's about the ongoing conversations, informal as well as formal, as well as the surveys. And it's great to hear that you balance surveys with face-to-face. Just, you mentioned time to talk. Is that a face-to-face initiative? Can you just tell me a bit about what's involved in that?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, during COVID, it couldn't be face-to-face at times. But what we felt that we missed when we went into lockdown, like everyone else, was those sort of coffee, you know, over a coffee, over breakfast type moments. Yeah. So we instigated them and they had to be virtual. But as soon as we came back out of lockdown, we were able to, we put one of them into the pub. We said, right, well, it's turned into a pub lunch. And what we do is we randomize the groups of people. And so two or three people get put in a group and they go and have we call it a time to talk. And, you know, like I say, one of those had been in a pub. Some of those might be a coffee shop, that some of them might be in the office. But they are just a great opportunity for everyone to know that this is not a work conversation as such. This is a how are you doing conversation. And it's just creating that space for people to open up. I do them too as a leader, and I'm very vulnerable. You know, I have to show my whole self, and that sets the tone, and that shares, that it demonstrates that I'm serious about this as a leader, all the way across the organisation. And I think that's helping to break down the sort of stigma that you get with well-being.
Yeah, and that's absolutely key to, you mentioned psychological safety earlier. And yeah, it's a buzzword, but it's so important, isn't it? It has become, the discussions around psychological safety have become a lot more prevalent recently, but there's good reason for that. It is all about building that trust. And through that trust, you get to have open conversations, you get employees contributing and to strategy and challenging leadership on things, which is a healthy way to be. And you mentioned there about the way you communicate and how you will express vulnerabilities. And again, that's so important as a way of creating this kind of psychological safe environment, because if you're demonstrating that you don't have the answers to everything, then that tells others, doesn't it, that, you know, we can talk about things, you don't have to know everything. We can, you know, if failure isn't something that we should be hiding either, it's something to learn from. That's all part and parcel, isn't it, of a psychologically safe environment.
Absolutely. And I would, you know, implore leaders to drive this agenda of getting this safety and trust, because what we get back as leaders is exactly as you said, people will speak up, they give me suggestions, they innovate, that they give me answers that will support our strategy. And, you know, goodness me, during COVID, we didn't have the answers as leaders. We didn't know. Yeah. I was watching the news at 4:30, watching Boris like everyone else. So, you know, it was really important to feel that I'm not alone in sort of figuring out the future of our business.
Yeah, but I think that's traditionally been the case, hasn't it? Leadership tend to feel that they should have all the answers. People should look to them. And I think, yeah, like you just said, the pandemic was a great leveler in that regard. And it's also, you know, it's about time, really, because your people are the ones talking to clients more often than not, I should imagine. They're the ones who are probably very aware of what the environment is like and what client needs are like. So it's fit and proper that they should be contributing to strategy, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So we've mentioned about you as a leader, and we haven't explicitly stated this, but about role modelling, and from everything you've just said is role modelling. We can give it that term, this expressing vulnerabilities and being an open and honest communicator. So when it comes to leadership role modelling of values and healthy behaviours, what are your thoughts? What do you think you do, other than the things you've already mentioned, to help demonstrate healthy behaviours?
Yeah, I think that as a leader of a small organisation, and I think this is quite key, I mean, leaders for all sizes of organisations, but one of the things I've really learned over the last 5 years, and perhaps maybe accentuated by COVID, is that the impact that my behaviour can have on the whole organisation. You know, I pretty much know all of my team, and I can wrap my arms around our organisation. And that's a really great thing for a leader, because I can, you know, I can take it on a journey. I can get my entire organisation in a room, and large organisations can't do that. But what it also means is that my impact, the shadow I cast, is huge. And that means that I need to be very considered in my behaviour sometimes. So a few years ago, I regularly sent people emails, not asking them to do anything urgent. But, you know, if I was working late at night or over the weekend, as I frequently do, I would pop a little email to that person thinking, well, they'll pick it up on Monday morning, or they'll pick it up tomorrow. And actually, the impact of an employee when the boss, you know, the owner of the organization, sends you an email outside of work, regardless of what it's asking you to do, is disconcerting. You know, it brought pressure to it. So it's little things like that that we need to be aware of as leaders to get our role modeling and our behavior right. You know, and for example, during COVID, I was able to have dinner with my family every evening because we were working from home, and that was really quite a revelation.
It's a luxury, isn't it? Yes.
It was a real luxury, but it was one I didn't want to give up afterwards. So now I just pop a little do not disturb on just for an hour to sit and, you know, go through the day with my whole family. And that's another really great example of how I can model that great behavior, because that's what I expect of our team too. You know, if they want time to just go and pick up their kids and then come back to work, that's absolutely fine. So I think all of these little bits of behavior that we role model as leaders are all building up to creating a healthier workplace, basically.
Yeah. And when we spoke before this interview, you mentioned to me, it's something that I didn't even realise existed as a one woman band, not working for a company these days, is that on Teams, there are red, amber and green lights that show whether your team is available. And it would be all too easy just to look at that and think, oh, I just, you know, they're not doing anything right now, I'll just pick up a quick call with them. Whereas, like you're explaining to me, it has big impacts psychologically on your team members, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I think the simple question of, is it a good time to talk? You know, just a little message like that says, I'm not insisting that we do this right now. You know, is this convenient for you as well as it is for me? And I think a phrase that came up a while back was, are we working from home or are we living at work? Yeah. And, you know, I don't want my team to live at work, because that would be a very unhealthy behavior. So this idea that we have this always on culture is not great for our mental bandwidth. You know, we do all need to switch off And I need to demonstrate that as a leader, and I need to permit it across our team as well.
Yeah, yeah, but not always easy, like you say. I mean, you're an entrepreneur. You clearly are. You're a driven lady to get where you are, and it's not easy to switch off, is it? You work long hours because that's who you are and that's what you do, and you've got to be true to yourself as well. And as long as that's not, as long as your health isn't suffering, you need to be that person. But at the same time, it's about setting those boundaries and being, like you said, being totally aware of the impression you're giving to the team. So absolutely, work those long hours if that's what you need to do behind the scenes. But that's not the, yeah, it's a hard balance, isn't it?
I think also I've learned that there's a difference between the work that I do at my laptop, you know, in my inboxes and all the rest of it, or in meetings, and the work that I do when I'm just going for a walk and getting some headspace and thinking over some of the challenges we have. So I think work can be, it can be more than one thing. And we do need to put those healthy boundaries in to give ourselves the mental bandwidth and the physical strength to carry on being a really great leader. Something I probably learned during COVID.
Yeah. I'm just going to throw one more in there about delegation. So being an entrepreneur who's used to wearing lots of hats and working long hours, how are you on delegation?
Oh, I think that's a great question. I think that's work in progress for many leaders. I think one thing that a challenge that we have as entrepreneurs, often we start and we wear so many hats, you know, to begin with in a small business. Where, you know, I started with just one co-founder, and you know, I was wearing all the hats, you know, with my co-founder. And as time goes on and the organization gets bigger and has more structure to it, it's really important to delegate and empower people to make decisions, and not sort of interfere and step in and rescue. So I think I see delegation more as an opportunity for me to help others to grow.
Yes.
Instead of carrying the guilt of, well, I could do this, so then I wouldn't make that person busy, I see it as a development opportunity for them to do things.
Yeah.
And I'll always find more things myself to do. So it's a perpetual work in progress to try and hand over some of my tasks, activities, decisions, etc.
Yeah, I think that's key, isn't it? It's part of building a continuous learning culture. That's another buzz phrase at the moment, continuous learning, as opposed to having a once a year performance review and one-to-one and just talking about training and development needs at that point. It's about having that, again, it comes back to that psychologically safe environment where people feel they can speak up about needs and ask questions and where they can ask for feedback on an ongoing basis, not just at that once a year review. And like you say, you know, being able to delegate is giving people control and autonomy over their work, which again leads to engagement, leads to well-being. So yeah, absolutely key.
They also need to be allowed to make mistakes without feeling like you're
going, oh, absolutely, you
know,
yeah,
I wish I'd done it myself, you know. So yeah, that's often one of the barriers for people to delegate, because they don't want someone else to get it wrong. But we have to go through that.
Just one last question, Sally. You, everything you're describing to me is just music to my ears. It's a very transformative way of being a leader, a transformative style of communication, which isn't, and by that I mean it's very open and inclusive. And you're clearly trying to invite contribution from employees, as opposed to the traditional style, which is very top down, hierarchical. So I'm just curious to know, is that something you have just learned as you've gone along on the job? Have you had specific training in that kind of communication style?
I think that's a great question. And I think 80% of it probably is innate in me. It's a sort of, how do I feel? How would I want to be treated? What feels like the right thing? And I think everybody tends to know that the sort of, does this feel right? Does it feel like the right thing to do? But definitely I'm in an always learning environment. I do have a mentor from a leadership perspective who I meet every month. And I work in a peer group as well, a peer group of other CEOs where we learn from each other. And we also in that environment can be really open and honest with each other and very vulnerable about, you know, the problems that we might be having in our businesses. So I think that probably keeps me massively on the straight and narrow, but it feeds my yearning to keep doing this better. You know, and I'm delighted that we've got some awards, but that's never good enough for me. You know, I always want us to do better and better. You know, the more motivated and more supportive my team can be, the faster we grow as a business and the better we become as a business. And our customers feel it. You know, our customers feel that our team are knowledgeable, confident, happy people. And they often tell me that. So it clearly shows through in our service.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Sally, that's all we have time for. But I feel like we could carry on chatting for ages. We've got loads more we could discuss. But that was amazing. You're doing some great things for your people and your business, clearly. And it's brilliant that you've been so upfront about sharing that with us today. So thank you so much for your time and your openness. It's very much appreciated.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a delight to talk it through with someone.
Thanks, Sally.
Thanks, bye.
For a chance to win a day's internal communication consultancy, including follow-up actions and recommendations, enter our competition now. The competition is open to SMEs employing 50 to 250 employees. For more information, go to legalandgeneral.com/betterwellbeingcompetition.